Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome back to Epochs. As the last few episodes, I've been talking about special forces raids and operations. I thought I should continue that at least for one more week, maybe going forward more in the future. This time, I thought I would talk about US special forces. I'm going to talk about the Navy SEALs in Vietnam, the so-called Backwater War in 1967 in Vietnam. And again, I'll be doing quite a lot of reading this week, interrupting myself, giving a bit more detail here or there. So this is an account of specifically 1967, so relatively early on in the whole process. But it was when the fighting was arguably at its height, certainly in the Mekong Delta region, and certainly as far as the special forces were concerned, arguably. So this is just a snapshot, really, of 1967, of what the underwater demolition teams, or the Navy SEALs, were doing in and around there. I hope you enjoy. Let's just dive straight in. So this is an account from T.L. Bosiljevac. And before his account starts, there's a bit of blurb, and I'll read that out to you. It says, taking their name from the elements they are trained to fight in, under and on the sea, air and land, the US Navy SEALs have their origins in the wartime underwater demolition teams, UDTs. Bear that in mind, because I'll be saying UDTs quite often. And that stands for underwater demolition teams. So that was where sort of the Navy SEALs, the original origins were from. Like it will say in a moment, clearing the beaches before D-Day, stuff like that. Because they're known as sort of frogmen. You know, they're in the Navy, they're not in the Army. They're Navy people. And so like amphibious warfare, frogmen. Okay. The underwater demolition teams, which cleared safe lanes through German beach defences for the 1944 Allied invasion of Normandy. During the Korean War, UDTs prepared the way for the amphibious landing at Incheon. In 1960, a US Navy study suggested the need for units even more specialised than the UDTs. So they've got the underwater demolition teams, but they'd like the same guys to be able to fight as extremely competent riflemen as well. Right, and other things, and be a parachutist. And in the end, you know, full-blown special forces, Navy SEALs can do everything. That's the idea. And in 1962, President John F. Kennedy authorised the establishment of two new teams bearing the appropriate acronym of SEAL, Sea, Air and Land. Recruited principally from the UDTs, the SEALs were soon deployed in Vietnam. Although they would later see action throughout the war zone, their initial area of operations was the Mekong Delta in the southernmost corner of Vietnam. With its immense patchwork of swamps, river and rice paddies, the Delta was a natural stronghold for the Viet Cong. That's the North Vietnamese guerrillas, the North Vietnamese enemy that they're fighting, the Viet Cong. The tasks assigned to the SEALs, as can be seen from the following accounts of their operations in 1967, ranged from setting up listening posts to monitoring VC movements to the demolition of VC bunkers. More often than not, the SEALs were sent out in three-man detachments with the simple order, Sat Cong, kill communists. In the first operations, insertion was made by Mike Boat, which are heavily armoured riverine craft, but later by a Boston Whaler, which are 16-foot glass fibre craft with a very shallow draft, or IBS, inflatable boat small. It's also irritable bowel syndrome, isn't it? But in this, IBS means inflatable boat small, or even by submarine. Later we'll hear about the USS Tunney, which is a submarine. The SEALs' Vietnam arsenal included the 5.56mm M63A1 Stoner light machine gun, which was heavily valued by the SEAL teams since it could be easily converted for a number of different roles, including submachine gun and assault rifle. They often called it the pig, just because it was a pig to carry. The M79 grenade launcher and the 9mm M45 Carl Gustav submachine gun, which was popular due to its reliability. For clandestine ops, the SEALs carried a 9mm Smith & Wesson Mark II Model Zero silence pistol, nicknamed the Hush Puppy, since it was developed originally for silencing enemy guard dogs. Combat knives such as the Randall and K-Bar were standard. Tiger stripe camouflage fatigues were often worn in preference to the usual combat issue green leaf pattern uniform, and many SEALs wore blue jeans, finding that these best withstood the Mekong mosquitoes. A special combat coat was developed for the use of SEALs, made of camouflage material with a built-in flotation chamber and designed to carry everything that a SEAL would need on a mission. During the Vietnam War, the SEALs were credited with 580 VC killed, and since Vietnam, SEAL teams have also seen service in the invasion of Panama, Grenada, and in the 1991 Gulf War, end quote. Of course, there's a lot more than that, but this book I'm reading from is actually quite old, from the 90s, the mid-90s. So, you know, SEALs have done a lot more since then. But okay, let's let the actual account of T.L. Bozeljevac, who tells us all about what the SEALs did in Vietnam in 1967. Okay, here we go. Quote, by the beginning of 1967, nearly 400,000 US servicemen were involved in Vietnam, i.e., you know, a massive deployment. The war continued to build on all fronts, and the United States continued to pressure the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong to find an end to the conflict. Navy special warfare involvement also expanded during the year. To date, only one frogman had been killed in UDT SEAL operations in country. The success of SEAL Team 1 platoons led to a wider role in the conflict for both SEAL teams. There was only SEAL Team 1 and SEAL Team 2 at this point, consisting of many platoons each, but there you go. The West Coast-based SEAL Team 1 expanded in manpower, putting additional operational platoons into the Mekong Delta. Meanwhile, for the first time, SEAL Team 2 began to deploy platoons into the war zone at the beginning of 1967. This year would mark a great increase in the Delta fighting. The war in the backwaters of the canals and rivers would no longer be limited to the Ruong Sat Special Zone, the RSSZ. So I'm going to say that a lot as well, or it gets said a lot in this account, the RSSZ, which is the Ruong Sat Special Zone. Put maps up so you can see what we're talking about. The Viet Cong increased their attacks on Saigon shipping in the RSSZ during January 1967. Out of a dozen incidents, three involved minings, while the majority of the others involved ambushes. Two SEAL squads were inserted by Mike Boat to patrol the RSSZ on the 6th of January. While conducting their reconnaissance mission along the Rak Muai Creek, the SEALs discovered a small base camp and subsequently destroyed it. Another patrol on the 9th was detected by enemy forces as it searched a small complex 14 miles south of Na Bi. While at least four VC attempted to surround the SEALs, the frogmen slipped into the Ra Kat Lay Bi Creek and swam quietly downriver. They silently passed a large enemy base camp but escaped to their helicopter extraction point. Once out of the area, airstrikes were called in on the communist forces with unknown results. Documents captured in December 1966 during Operation Charleston revealed that the VC were using several freshwater wells in the RSSZ for resupply. Subsequent aerial photography confirmed that the VC were using numerous trails leading to the wells. SEALs were immediately ordered to destroy them. On the 12th of January 1967, two six-man teams were inserted by a helicopter. Using explosives, the teams demolished eight wells near Than Tho Hamlet in the lower RSSZ. Intelligence reports from a US Army advisor in Can Giao 2 months later indicated that this action caused great hardship among the communist units in the vicinity, forcing them to carry water from a much greater distance. 4 days later, the SEALs destroyed a large rice cache they discovered in a camp 12 miles south of Na Bi. While the SEALs were moving to insert for one of the demolition operations, another VC ambush of an LCM riverboat occurred on the 20th of January. Many of the SEALs and Navy crewmen aboard were wounded and one VIS officer was killed, but the US forces fought back aggressively and ended their mission by killing four enemy soldiers and capturing nearly 360 VC suspects, along with numerous documents and a large quantity of supplies. Most of the detainees turned out to be active Viet Cong. The SEALs had been operating in conjunction with a US Army unit that was sweeping the area. The SEALs' mission had been to patrol the river and to prevent enemy forces from invading the army sweep. Other patrols reconned the mangroves for VC activity, many times finding their movement hampered by thick vegetation. On the 9th of January, one patrol was forced to extract by a Maguire rig via a helicopter winch after it was unable to make its way to a riverine extraction site. A small and deserted VC camp and rice cache were found and destroyed by men from SEAL Team 1 on the 16th. The cache, which held an estimated 17.5 tons of rice, was scattered by 160 pounds of explosives that the frogmen had requested via helicopter. Although missions were run almost daily, only a handful of enemy contacts resulted. On countless patrols, the SEALs heard the Viet Cong use small arms fire in patterns as signalling and warning from one enemy unit to another. It was easy for the communists to hear the approach of the river vessels used for insertion and extraction by the SEALs. The VC sensed the presence of the new deadly Navy units and gave them a wide berth. Also during January, Operation Deckhouse 5 utilised men from UDT 12, again, remember that's Underwater Demolition Team, so UDT 12, to find and mark safe channels in the Ko Chien and Ham Luang rivers. The success of the operation in the Than Phu secret zone was due in large part to the fact that the Yi missions included channel searches, surf operations, mine searches and salvage work. On the 2nd and 3rd of February, four SEAL Team 1 squads conducted a series of patrolling sweeps in the RSSZ. Several VC bunkers and a concrete system were demolished and four enemy sampans were fired upon. Sampans like a small boat, like a kind of a canoe almost, like a little bit bigger than a little rowboat, but a boat, a sampan. A small wooden boat. Additionally, a small quantity of ordnance and equipment was captured. Patrols all throughout the spring consisted of intelligence recons, listening posts and ambushes, and there was a marked improvement in the objectives of the missions compared to the earlier freestyle ambushes of the year before. A few of the operations were designed to abduct Viet Cong for the purpose of gaining intelligence through interrogation. Many team members saw fresh evidence of enemy forces in certain areas, but few actually made any contact. Almost immediately after arriving in country on the 31st of January, SEAL Team 2 patrols commenced operations. Prior to leaving the continental United States, two SEAL Team 2 platoons, consisting of two officers and 10 enlisted men each, stopped over for 2 weeks in San Diego to train and confer with SEAL Team 1 elements. During their stop on the West Coast, the men trained in weapons and tactics in the desert located east of the city, received intelligence updates and briefs, and prepared their equipment for deployment. The group, which was to include a specially trained scout dog named Prince, arrived at Binh Thuy airfield outside Can Tho at the end of the month. From there, they moved to Nha Bi, where some initial orientation missions were run with elements from Team 1 before the East Coast units struck out into their own designated areas of operation in the Mekong Delta along the Bassac River and its tributaries. On the 7th of February, one platoon advised the 32nd Vietnamese Ranger Battalion and called in air and artillery support for the unit. Yet this type of initial operation was of little consequence. It took a few weeks to iron out problems concerning exactly how the SEALs were to be deployed in the Delta. Many of the same questions that had faced SEAL Team 1 elements in the RSSZ a year before were now echoed in the Delta regions where other platoons were hoping to work. By the second week in March, these issues had been resolved. The Team 2 SEALs were to perform the majority of their missions within 5 kilometres of the major rivers in the Delta, but they would penetrate further inland with special approval. At times, the elements became the gravest enemy of all, i.e. the jungle and the waterways, of course. Well before dawn on the 13th of February, men from Use 12 Detachment Charlie launched from the deck of the Tunny in motorised small boats off Sa Huynh in 2nd Corps. Again, remember the Tunny is the submarine. Large swells met the men as they anchored the command boat just outside the surf zone and sent two swimmer scouts ashore. In the darkness of the squall, the command boat capsized as it was hit by an estimated 20-foot breaker. The three men on board were unceremoniously dumped into the water. They struggled to the beach as the other boat was rocked by the high surf and fought to remain upright. UDT men in the second boat activated an emergency flare to notify the sub of the situation. The Tunny began to respond to the call for assistance and launched a third IBS. The frogmen from the command boat were barely able to make their way ashore and link up with the scout swimmers stranded on the beach. After burying their radio and the remains of their boat, they began several attempts to swim through the surf. Three of the men made it to the second boat just after 0600 hours. Meanwhile, the Tunny had moved to within 1,300 yards of the beach and anchored. She called on a nearby LST, which stands for Landing Ship Tank, LST, the USS Westchester County, for additional help. The LST launched an amphibious landing craft to join in the search. Just after it had launched, another swimmer was reported recovered by the second IBS. The last swimmer was recovered by the landing craft after about an hour, and the vessel linked up with the sub to transfer all hands. Luckily, the frogmen were uninjured, although they were exhausted by the ordeal. The necessary hydrographic data was finally obtained, and Operation Deckhouse 6, designed as another marine assault to throw the communists in First Corps off balance, was launched on the 16th of February. New methods and tactics were developed by the frogmen, mostly as a result of trial and error. The SEALs were beginning to discover that wearing boots into the enemy territory was a dead giveaway. Enemy forces went barefoot in most areas, and they would easily pick up the tracks of their enemy's footwear. Many SEAL platoons began to go barefoot themselves and carried a pair of lightweight coral booties or tennis shoes to be used only in certain terrain. In the mud and on the hard-packed trails, bare feet additionally proved more sensitive and made careful movement along booby-trapped trails more positive. A low-slung booby-trap tripwire was more easily sensed on bare skin. Stalking without boots also proved to be an absolutely silent method to penetrate an enemy camp. Squad radios were used in the spring without impressive results. They seemed to be too noisy for the small units attempting to remain as ghosts in the brush. Yeah, just to say, going barefoot in the jungles of central Vietnam. In the Mekong Delta. Wetlands. Yeah, I wouldn't do it. Get all sorts of bites. And of course, cuts. All sorts of infections, quite possible. Yeah, if I could possibly help it. If you could possibly help it, you wouldn't want to go barefoot in the jungle. But obviously these men make the decision that it may well be a matter of life and death if they don't. So any sort of hardship they'll just put up with. US ground troops involvement in Vietnam continued to expand steadily. In the third week of February, Operation Junction City was conducted in 3 Corps near the Cambodian border, the largest military operation to date. It involved 22 US battalions in a sweep-and-destroy operation that targeted guerrilla base camps in the south. On the 3rd of March, UDT 11 relieved UDT 12 at the forward-deployed underwater demolitions team in Westpac. UDT 12 later received the Navy unit recommendation for its 1966 to 1967 Westpac cruise. The citation noted that the frogmen reconned over 120 miles of beaches, rivers and harbours in the combat zone and provided other valuable services to the 7th Fleet's amphibious forces. Also in March, UDT 11 received the same award for operations between January 1964 and September 1966. Its effort included the reconnaissance of over 110 miles of beaches and rivers and countless missions in support of the Pacific Fleet's operations. 6 LDNN were assigned to conduct training operations with US Navy SEALs out of Narbi beginning on the 9th of March. In the initial after-action reports, the Americans felt that the LDNN accompanying the units would be of greater value given a little more time and experience. On the 11th, a second platoon ambush, its first real contact of the tour, interdicted an enemy resupply attempt 15 miles southeast of Can Tho. 4 VC were killed while the SEALs were extracted by a riverine craft under fire. On the 12th of March, 20 sensors were implanted by a SEAL Team 1 platoon in Vam Sat. On the 15th of March, Admiral Sharp and Ward and General Westmoreland, the overall commander, visited SEAL Team 1's detachment Gulf to express their personal admiration for the job the SEALs were tackling all over the Delta. That same day, a small SEAL Team 1 ambush netted 3 VC killed and several weapons and a small amount of operational equipment from an enemy sampan. The mud, tidal flows and nipper palms were not always the only environmental hazard. On a riverine abduction ambush mission on the 17th of March, a SEAL Team 1 frogman encountered an obnoxious crocodile. The amphibian finally forced the frogman to flee his position and shoot in self-defence. Now, these are the words of this individual SEAL Team member. He said, "At the bank, in about 3 foot of water, I saw what looked like a stump. The stump started moving closer to me. I stopped. It came closer and closer, and when it was about 6 feet away, I saw that the stump had 2 eyes and was pointing its snout at me. I moved back about 3 or 4 feet, pointed my M16 and fired at him." And that's the end of his account. And we're told, "The noise compromised the ambush location and caused the men to extract." Always with a markedly unique sense of humour, frogmen throughout Vietnam faced their physical adversities with directness. A sign composed and posted by the SEALs at Narbi read, "Welcome to the Narbi Summer Resort. For your pleasure, we provide swimming facilities, delightful frolics under the ships in the harbour, boating excursions, try one of our famous moonlight cruises down the river, camping trips, enjoy a night out in the open air as you sit comfortably and companionably beside a trail or a stream." End quote. On the 19th of March, a SEAL Team 1 patrol carried a sniper rifle on an ambush abduction mission with poor results. It seemed to be more trouble than benefit to lug the precision weapon through the mud and thick vegetation, only to find fields of fire that could be covered easily by a weapon with regular iron sights. Again, you're not going to be firing in the jungle. You're not going to be firing over any sort of particularly long range. The biggest problem was that the sniper weapon was not an effective tool at night for SEAL operations at that stage of the war, as the SEALs reported. The SEALs also attempted to pioneer other new techniques in order to gain the upper hand against the sly and elusive enemy. While most squads inserted by riverine craft into their patrol areas, some swam from their boats to shore. A SEAL Team 1 group on the 19th of March jumped from the stern of its PBR as it continued to move upriver. In this way, the engine noise continued at the same pitch and would not indicate to VC close at hand that men had been placed ashore. The team inserted with minimal equipment. No radios were carried. Each man had his weapon, two magazines of ammunition, a flare, and a red lens flashlight. Many platoons and squads used this method during the war to insert. It was found in the early years that the engine noise at about 1500 to 1800 RPM from a PBR created enough ambient noise to cover the technique. Another method was to coordinate an overflight of helicopters. Their noise and distraction would often cover the noise of a team inserting or closing on a target. Other patrols utilised false insertions and extractions to try to catch the enemy. The riverine craft would feint putting men ashore at various points to make the VC nervous and force them to move, a process similar to hunters flushing a rabbit or quail from the bush. The SEALs would then try to catch the VC in ambush. During false extractions, half of the team would depart the patrol area as others remained in place to lure the enemy into a sense of security as they saw and heard the partial patrol depart. A variation of the false extraction, the double back ambush, had the entire patrol fake a withdrawal to the water as if they were extracting. They would then hook around onto their own trail and lay an ambush for anyone trailing or tracking them. The men of SEAL Team 2 were shifted slightly once again to take advantage of these unorthodox tactics that they and other SEALs were mastering. On the 31st of March, 2nd Platoon were moved to the PBR base at Mai Tho to begin operations in that part of the Delta. In April, more emphasis was placed on intelligence collection to undermine VC patterns, locations and lines of communication and supply. SEALs were sent out to occupy observation and listening posts concealed in dense undergrowth for up to 7 days at a time, just sitting in the jungle for 7 days straight. You have to be extremely fit, incredible endurance and patience, of course. We hope you enjoyed that video, and if you did, please head over to lotuseaters.com for the full unabridged video.